Hey, this is Kevin Conroy. The voice of Batman.
Hi, I'm Benjamin David. Welcome to the DC Animated Movie Show, a podcast and YouTube series for the prestigious, ongoing catalog of DC Animated Movies. I'm a filmmaker, journalist, and podcaster, and I've been covering DC Animation for years now.
Hey, this is Kevin Conroy.
Interviewing creators, voice actors, and superfans on my other podcast and YouTube channel, Above and Batman Beyond.
We give you Andrea Romano.
Hi.
So in this podcast, you can expect weekly episodes of DC Animated news, reviews, commentary tracks, Instagram Q&A, and our 10-minute or less audio-video bite series from our YouTube channel. Once again, that's
Above and Batman Beyond.
Most episodes will be hosted solo by me, Benjamin David, but for commentary tracks and interviews soon to come, I'll be joined by various creators and superfans once again from DC Animation. New episodes of the podcast drop every Monday, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast for a big holiday premiere. You can find the DC Animated Movie Show on Apple, Spotify, the Anchor app, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram to join in on the Q&A. Just like the podcast, we are at DC Animated Movie Show, and we'll also be dropping bonus episodes pretty soon, going behind the scenes of our YouTube channel, as well as our past DC Animated coverage from New York Comic Con. So this has been Benjamin David, and remember, animated we stand.
Hey, this is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, telling you to go above and Batman beyond.
Hey, this is Blade Summers telling you to go above and Batman beyond.
This is Bernard Chang.
Dan Jurgens.
This is Yoko McCann from Funko.
This is Zach from Diamond Select Toys.
This is Angelo cosplaying as Negan.
My name is Kevin, a Beyond fan, and I'm telling you to go above and Batman Beyond.
Like, three quarters of that movie, solid.
As far as Mr. Freeze goes, nice to meet you.
Welcome back, Neo-Gothamites, to Above and Batman Beyond, a YouTube channel and podcast all about the futuristic Bat Beyond. I am your co-host, Benjamin David. Happy New Year, Neo-Gotham, first podcast of the year. And we return in 2021 with The Return of the Joker. Today's episode is the part two conclusion of our Return of the Joker 20th anniversary commentary track. So if you haven't heard part one, then pause this, subscribe to the show, and go back for part one of the commentary. This past December marks 20 years, two decades, since the Joker's 2000 return, the one and only Batman Beyond feature we've ever gotten. So once again, to celebrate the 20th anniversary of our beloved animated classic, my close friend, co-host here on the show, and Beyond expert Eli Benson joins me for our Return of the Joker 20th anniversary commentary track. As I said in part one, doing this commentary was a ton of fun. So fun, in fact, that we've decided to continue doing Batman Beyond commentaries for the entire animated series. So be sure to subscribe and stick around here at the podcast and our YouTube channel so you don't miss all the commentary beyond. You can find the show you're listening to now on iTunes, SoundCloud, and we're now on Spotify, which we're super excited to announce since a lot of people were asking about that. Again, we are Above and Batman Beyond. Please subscribe to the show for new episodes every Wednesday. Please rate and review the podcast as well if you can. A 5-star review really helps us out on iTunes, so if you like what you hear today and you haven't written us a review yet, please do so and we'll read it aloud on the show and enter you for our next giveaway. Just for 5 stars and a few lines on iTunes, not a bad deal. And just like our podcast, we are Above and Batman Beyond on YouTube. Please consider subscribing to our YouTube channel. In fact, that's where we spend most of our time these days. We do frequent breakdowns of Batman Beyond episodes, weekly podcast clips, and we also have our DC Animated Movie Show on the channel as well. That's a video series and podcast for the prestigious ongoing catalog of DC Animated Movies. And great news, the first podcast episode of DC Animated Movie Show has officially dropped. Episode 1 was our 2020 DC Animated Movie Countdown, Best to Worst. Talked about the great JL Dark Apocalypse War, Man of Tomorrow, the shocking disappointment that is Death in the Family, and more. So subscribe for new audio episodes every Monday, and frequent video episodes on our YouTube channel. Again, that's Above and Batman Beyond. And you can find that podcast on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Please follow us on social media, especially on our Instagram. We are at Batman Beyond Media. for frequent posts, Q's and A's, tons of fun over there. We're also at Batman Beyond Media on Facebook and at Batman Beyond POD on Twitter and Gmail. Again, my name is Benjamin David. You can find me at Benjamin of David on Instagram and Facebook. And don't forget to follow our other co-host with a far more powerful Instagram. That's Eli Benson at Batman_Beyond_fanpage. So without further ado, today is the part two conclusion of our Return of the Joker 20th anniversary commentary. And again, be sure to subscribe for more Batman Beyond commentaries soon to come, starting with season one of the animated series.
This is Christopher Carter telling you to go above and Batman Beyond.
All right, guys, so real quick, before we return for part two, let's make sure we sync up our running times for the second part of the commentary. Exactly where we left off in the movie last time, please line up your Joker returning devices to 34 minutes and 30 seconds. Again, that's 34:30. So I'll give you a second to do that. And 3, 2, 1, play. We were thinking about taking a break around the time of the flashback, so it's up to you, Eli.
I'm fine powering through, I guess.
All right, let's do it. So, if we're in the flashback, this is the classic flashback that if Bat fans don't want to give it up for this movie being one of their favorite, they always at least mention the flashback and why the flashback is what makes it. Because it is a 20-minute flashback. It's pretty much an episode of New Adventures plugged into this amazing story. And, you know, one of the reasons why they chose this story, I thought this was interesting. It's because at the time, lots of interest from fans, like the number one question at the time was, what happened to Robin?
Right.
So they decided that this is a movie that answers that question. So this flashback, it makes sense why this is so long. And then without, actually we are spoiling, but if you haven't turned this off yet, this is about Robin, some fucked up stuff happening to Robin. Mm-hmm.
But they've seen it.
They've seen
it. If you're watching this commentary, you've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that twist is obviously what explains what happened to Robin, so it's pretty badass way to answer that question. What happened to Robin? Well, he's now Joker. Damn, dude.
I love the old abandoned Arkham.
Yes,
it's just such a setting.
It's such a perfect setting for what's about to happen. I mean, where else would Batman face off? The Batman versus the Joker, like the matchup that is destined to do what they do for all of time. Where better to solidify the final battle? This is the battle of the Death Star for them. It's like, that's where you do it. And it looks so badass, all, you know, worn down and stuff.
I know. It's so cool seeing the New Adventure stuff look so crisp like this.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, so again, this is the Blu-ray remaster.
Yep.
And as you said, this is the best Batman Beyond ever looked.
Yep.
So because it's in the same animation style anyway as TNBA, yeah, this is like probably the best. Would you say this is probably the best TNBA ever has looked?
Yeah, either this or Mystery of the Batwoman. Because Mystery of the Batwoman came out on Blu-ray, and that was a
movie. That's 2003.
Right.
Yeah, so by that time.
But
this looks so damn good.
But yeah, like movie era TBNA looks great. And I've always been a bigger fan of the visuals of TBNA, personally. I love animated series. How could you not?
Right.
Visually, it's in a class of its own. I just aesthetically have always resonated more with TBNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I caught more of on TV when I was a kid. And obviously it's most indicative of Batman Beyond and Justice League. So I just feel like I've spent more time with this design. But I totally get why people like...
Which makes this watching this even more powerful. Like if this is your style of Batman, to see your Robin get corrupted, to see...
I know.
It all in your style just makes it all the more haunting.
I know. So this is horrifying.
So this is the most fucked up thing that's ever happened in children's programming.
And as you know, this is kind of an allegory for death in the family.
Absolutely. This is the death in the family of the DCAU.
Yes.
You know, we never got a Jason Todd back then. And it's the responsibility of Bruce to what is a character that's based on, you know, mythologically, especially like anywhere from medieval tales to in Japanese lore, all kinds of stories where you have this, you know, the page and the knight.
Right.
And you have the kid who is your, and it's typically like this 13, 14 year old, that age range. That's your Robin. Right. And to have, and that's your responsibility, and that's your, oh, there's a father-son thing or a master-teacher thing, whatever the dynamic is, there's that heavy responsibility that Joker has completely just made it all about himself and his eternal fight with Batman, and has sacrificed a child to just be a fucked up character in his twisted story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a really, I think, a way more messed up way than the crowbar to do that. The two girls fighting here, oh my God. This is so good.
It is good. I love in the later stuff where we get just like Batman Batgirl stuff. I just like their chemistry. I know obviously their dynamic has changed over the past couple of years with, you know, certain releases and things, but and I know that even in Batman Beyond, it was implied that there was a certain romantic relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't so heavy-handed.
No.
At that point in time, at this point in time, they were more like partners. She just happened to have romantic feelings for him. And I don't know. I like their chemistry.
I never rubbed up against it. You know, a lot of people are bumped up against it. You know, I know a lot of people didn't like it. At least this version of it, you know, it's, I can't speak to, cause a lot of people, I think they go, they're pulling from comics or they're pulling from other movies or whatever it is that they're just going like, Batman could never do this with their sidekick. And I'm just like, dude, I don't know. I'm looking at their version of it and I don't see it being inorganic. I don't see it being, these two work day in and day out. Oh dude, Harley fallen. So that's
in the rain. But yeah, no, I mean,
actually, we know she comes back because she, man, how did Harley make it through that one? She truly is Joker's girl, man, to make it through that one.
Yeah. It's so tropey, though. I mean, the Joker in so many different episodes of BTIS, quote unquote, dies, right? So.
Yeah, like if that was Joker just falling, I wouldn't question it. But it's funny that they even do the same thing. Okay, so this is our family memories. This mid-century 50s family, like, old-timey mad chemist. Fuck.
So in the...
It's so messed up.
In the censored version, you don't see those electric shock, like, tongs. And you don't see Robin trying to struggle as much here. Like, this scene was definitely cut down in the censored version.
And instead of doing, you know, you have so many things here. Joker's about theatrics. Then you have, which is of course what Batman's all about. He's screening it in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just showing him footage on some screen in Arkham that he could, but he's playing it in a theater. He's putting to film, you know, this atrocity, and then this fight that's obviously about to happen is all happening projected in front of the screen to go down in history as forever as the final battle between Batman and Joker. Like,
yeah,
how good is that? It's like a movie about the Joker returning. That reflexive, like, film on film is this right here, dude. The shadow.
I've got slides.
I mean, what is better than what we're looking at right now, dude? Throws him down a bunch of Joker blocks. Like,
now, this scene is interesting.
Which is very 50s Dick Sprang. It's all here, dude.
This is... I love how Bruce will, like, threaten the Joker, and the Joker just, like, does not believe him anymore. If you had the guts for that kind of fun, you would have done it years ago.
Oh, and he stabs him in the leg. This guy's brutal.
I love the blood.
Yeah, it's badass seeing blood in a Batman movie. I remember as a kid seeing blood was like, whoa, it's doing blood.
And it echoes the blood that's in Rebirth. Oh, that blood going down the lip there.
You're right, in the intro when he's
he's
in the new suit. Bruce Wayne is in the Beyond suit, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And he walks out and he drops the gun. Yeah, he's bloody.
Yep. In the same fashion, it's interesting.
All right, dude. What is it? What is he? Little J? JJ?
JJ Joker Jr.
Oh, God. This is twisted. So the laugh there, Andrea Romano takes over when it goes from Matthew Valencia's laugh
to
when it goes,
when he's crying.
Right? And they phased it in from his voice to hers. Yeah, when it goes from laughing to crying. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I think I heard that.
So Andrea Romano, the famous voice director, filled in to fill in for the cry part.
It's so brilliant.
Oh,
it's so tragic, God. Too.
Like, this kid that Bruce had. I mean, this is not a kid that he discovered who was, like, already doing a bunch of heroic stuff. Like, he 100% brought him into this. Like, you could argue that he can't be fully guilty for Barbara because she's so stubborn. She would have done, if he didn't let her be Batgirl, she would have been some other girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she would have just done her own thing. And whereas, like, he brought this kid up to be a hero.
Yeah.
And took him off the streets. And now I'm going to get emotional, but like the idea of redemption for him too, which is the theme throughout Beyond, to then have this piece of shit that you have been battling forever to twist this kid.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's so tragic.
And again, that's your son. That's your student. That's your, as a former teacher, like I've told you, like you have that sense of responsibility that you've never felt before. At least I did. You know, it's a big bond you have with your students and, let alone that kind of student.
Yeah.
You know, if these guys make an inch mistake, they all die, falling off a building or doing this or doing that. It's like the most dangerous job ever.
And it honestly speaks a lot about his relationship with Terry, right? And the things
about Bruce's Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, just the fact that beyond Rebirth, he's let him use the suit and he lets him go. Because this is different. Terry is in a league of his own now. He's not out there with Bruce. Bruce is in the cave. Like, Terry's the one who's going out now, and he's doing it alone. And that means when Terry's confronting a new villain, or if he goes out and confronts the Joker, the most Bruce can do is talk him through it. Like, he can't actually be there to protect him on the field. And it really speaks to how much he trusts Terry with the mantle of Batman, but how much it also concerns him, because the second the Joker returned, he obviously wanted him to quit.
That's so interesting to say that he trusts him, because, yeah, I mean, the rule is in the Batcave, it's not, there's no debate, it's not a democracy. Like, he runs the show.
Right.
So to let go of that control on the street is a big deal for Bruce Wayne Batman.
Yeah.
This is dope seeing Tim Drake doing his satellite job and planting the seeds, baby.
I love the scene that's coming up in a minute. You're about to see, I love when he does the Batman vanish on him.
When he sensed him before he was even there.
He's, yeah.
Like, and Barbara can do that too. Like, that sense, whatever the fuck Bruce does to train them, they can all hear like criminals coming.
This is the first and only time we see Barbara at the computer chair.
Oh,
as older Barbara. Obviously in
New Batgirl's back, baby.
Obviously in New Adventures we see it, but in Beyond Era, this is the only time we see her at the computer desk.
You're there. Right. She also drives the Batmobile in New Adventures.
Yeah. So it's really cool to kind of get an homage to Oracle, but at the same time
nice.
But at the same time it brings this feeling of like the family's kind of come back for this bigger problem, the bigger problem being the Joker's returned, right? The Joker.
So yeah, she's like, I know this guy. We got to get rid of this guy.
Yeah. So it's cool seeing her kind of back in.
And it's cool to see that, you know, she's fully admitted to, I can't take care of this guy without you, Batman.
Yeah.
Like, and that's for her character in this part of the story being beyond she is not about giving over control to Bruce. She's like, no, like, I got a handle on the city. It's still a messed up city, but like, I don't want a Batman around again.
Right.
So for her to not only relinquish control, but then go like, I'm going to be Batgirl because we need you guys.
Right.
That's sweet. I always just love Ghoul. It's such a simple, awesome, like, oh, he's Scarecrow meets...
like a witch.
Yeah, witch. Jokerized Scarecrow.
He's a popular Joker design, and also people really like Terminal.
It's a dope design.
Yeah.
Who's the big guy? Who's the big guy?
That is Chucko.
Chucko.
Yep. Chucko gets killed in the Once in Future Thing Part 2 by Kronos. Kronos sends him back into the past, and he gets killed by the meteor that killed the dinosaurs.
Wow. That is savage.
Now, that was an alternate future, but we still see it, which is funny.
That's pretty amazing.
That's funny. No one's leaving till I get answers, and they completely ignore him and leave.
Oh, those things are cool. They're like jets, like floating jet skis.
Yeah.
It is. Like, they really did not take full advantage of the toys back then. I mean, you had so many vehicles you could have made.
I love this weapon. It kind of reminds me of like a Death Star type thing.
The giant laser from space?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the part. I love how this is a part of the movie where apparently, like, this is a controversial. Like, people think this is cheesy, like, too much. I'm like, what? So you were right with, like, the giant, like, Sid Mead, like, skyline, but you can't handle a giant laser from space?
You know, it's not the strongest, but for me, the laser isn't even really necessarily what matters. It's all the character interactions that come about because of the Joker's return, right? I think that there's just such strong character stuff happening here that the nuances, like, you know, why a laser, you know, a nuance like how did, I mean, now we know that it was like Cadmus tech, but like how did the Joker even get the tech to be able to do inputting himself into Tim Drake. The little details like that didn't matter to me at the time because the character stuff in this movie is so good.
It's so good, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of forgiving that you have to do with the...
with the Joker
the plot. Sci-fi stuff. Yeah. Yeah. The sci-fi babble, techno babble.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they had said when they were the Neo-Gotham extra feature that they just had to make stuff believable enough.
Right.
I forget. That's not the exact quote. I don't want to misquote him. But Bruce, check out that featurette. And Bruce Timm talks about, they talk about this exact thing when they were developing both Neo-Gotham and the tech of Beyond. Like how far are we going to go with flying cars and this and that? And there were just these degrees of believability. Right. Like, for example, with the flying cars thing, if you had money, you could have a flying car. You know, so Bruce Wayne has this dope-ass, what looked like the Batmobile, which isn't really smooth if you think about it. He's like, my drive-around car is going to look exactly like the old Batmobile. I don't care. I'm old. If you want to think I was Batman, that's fine with me. But, yeah, it's like, if you're rich, you have a flying car. If you're poor, you have an Akira bike. Mm-hmm. And if you're mega-rich, then you live in some big high-rise. So they kind of, like... semi explained it out, but I think that's cool. Like, you just have enough there that
I like that. In addition to like how visually things have changed, like it's the little subtle changes, but it makes sense that like we would do little things like that. Like, you know, in this particular future, lapels aren't quite as prevalent as they were, like on business suits and stuff. He said like that was a design choice they did, you know.
Oh, that's why they almost have that like square V-neck thing.
Right. Just little tiny visual things, little tiny clothing changes. It's all to be in a believable setting, right? So like you said, just believable enough.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also the future. So you can't, you can try to say, oh, we're not going to have this by that point. But there's also plenty you don't know that we're going to have. And
yeah,
who wants to look at some boring version of an old city?
These tech rooms are always so cool.
I was just going to say that, like, how many stories is this one room? Speaking of, like, the fantasy of this future. But, yeah, no, I mean, in all truth, as you've put it, as we've talked about numerous times in the show, like, it is a fantasy level of futurism, mm-hmm. which is fun. So this is a sick fake out. What were you going to say?
I always wonder if, because I honestly don't remember if I was fooled by the red herring my first time watching. It was just so long ago, and I was so young. I wonder if I saw this now for the first time, like at the age I am now and like what I know about comics and stuff, if I would have fallen for the red herring, if I would have just assumed that Tim Drake is working for the Joker but not the Joker. You know, I just wonder how much of this movie would have been a plot twist to me. But I saw this movie at such a young age and so long ago and so many times ago that I don't remember what I thought the first time. Besides being blown away, I was blown away by it. I just don't remember if I fell susceptible to the twist.
It is hard to track that. Like, people often ask that stuff on podcasts, like, oh, were you tricked by this or that? I'm like, there's a lot about this I'm not going to remember in terms of my experience watching it because it's been so long.
I do remember the first time I saw the trailer for this movie. I was in Fuddruckers.
Yes.
Remember those restaurants?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And
cheeseburger joint.
Yeah.
It was like a cheeseburger chain that they would have all these crazy flavors of cheeseburgers.
Yeah. And they always had
and the sign always makes you think fuck when you see it. It's like a subliminal fuck sign is what it is.
And they always had Cartoon Network on, so I remember I saw the trailer for this movie and I was just kind of blown away, like, oh, my favorite TV show is going to get a movie.
You're like, hell yeah, you're just shoveling gigantic cheeseburgers. Yo, this right here is the best. You say, like, this is the best Batmobile, the best Batman Beyond has ever looked. This sequence is the best Batmobile, and I have always said that the Batmobile is one of my favorite parts about the general design of the show in general, whatever. Him jumping into that just now,
you know, all it pulling out,
all lighting up. It's a sequence that, like, you could tell they wouldn't have spent that much time and money doing during the show.
Yeah.
Because, like, you've kind of seen all this in different sequences, mm-hmm. but this is a movie. Here we go. And, like, an almost 360 shot, aces in there. Like, it's just the best Batman Beyond you're going to get.
Dude. In the centered version, in addition to all the lights coming up, his seatbelt straps on, too.
Oh, come on.
But this is uncut. We don't need seatbelts here.
We don't need seatbelts.
Yeah.
So even your flying car that goes 300 miles an hour is going to outrun this laser.
Its top speed is Mach 3.
How fast is that? Yeah, Joker is fucking up
over
this city.
1,000 miles an hour. I posted about it on Instagram a while ago, but I don't remember what it exactly breaks down to.
So it would outrun my Corolla, you're saying?
Maybe just a little bit.
This is sick seeing, too. Like, this is almost seeing him, like, weaving out of cars like that. We don't see him in traffic a lot doing maneuvering and stuff. Like, this is a really sick Batmobile scene.
True. He's usually, like, far above the city in the Batmobile.
Yeah. You know, and car chases are always a fun thing in Batman, but it's not really... You don't get a lot of... car chases per se and beyond, right? I mean, you get him, I guess he chases flying cars, like there is some of that, but like I said, on a road, I think is what I'm trying to say, was cool to see.
Right.
The Jolly Jack factory. It's got to be an abandoned factory for every villain.
So obviously the Joker was just bugging out there because he was transforming back to normal. That's why he had to leave the broadcast.
Oh yeah, nice.
That's why when Terry enters the room later, Tim Drake is on the floor and not Joker because he's transforming back.
And this is why we have Eli with us. Shit. shot out of the sky. I don't know why. What is so pleasing to me are vehicles like
crash landing,
getting, but specifically like getting shot down, or like in the Matrix when they like, when someone like stomps on one of the cars, those assholes in the dreads, and the car flips.
Right.
That is so pleasing to me. I don't know why. And then when he flipped it in real life, when he flipped the tractor trailer in Dark Knight, I really wish they didn't show that in the trailer, because like, if I had seen that live, like, this is already the best movie ever. You're going to flip a tractor trailer, and I know this shit is real. I went to that, I think it was Wacker Avenue in Chicago when I was in Chicago, the year that Dark Knight came out, and we looked on all the shooting locations of the Dark Knight, and we went to Wacker where he flipped the 18-wheeler.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I was like, sick.
So
DD's rule.
They cheated here.
Yeah, back to Beyond.
Typically when Terry's invisible, he looks more like a shadow. But okay, here, for the sake of the gag, they made him look like completely translucent, like you didn't see him at all.
Oh, interesting.
Except for the end when he jumps back in between them.
Wait, so what do you mean they cheated?
So, like, for the joke of, like, the box lifting up and stuff, it's supposed to obviously look like an invisible box, like, lifting.
Oh.
You know, he's not as apparent as he usually is when he's cloaking.
Got it. But I think that's also, you know, like an assumption thing when people start suddenly speaking English. Like, you know, they're still speaking French if it's a French movie.
Yeah.
But it's like an audience thing of like, all right, we don't want to have a French accent, or we don't want to. We don't want to have subtitles the whole movie. I think that's their way of going, he's going to be invisible when we need him to be, but we just need you to see him so yeah, you know where he's going.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what you're saying by the cheat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
But yeah, I mean, the only reason they make him look like a shadow to begin with is so we can track him, you know, but.
But that is an interesting question. Like, do people see that, like in Predator, when you can kind of see? I guess that's never really been covered.
I'm going to assume invisible. Not. Like, I know that we, the audience, need to be able to see them, but I always assume that, like, here when he's cloaking, the only time he's ever been spotted is whenever he's trying to do that to, like, Barbara, for example, who's trained.
Right.
When it's, like,
a regular. And they're, like, hearing him. They're not. They're right. Sensing him. They're not.
When it's a regular, like, civilian or, like, a thug, they never see him.
Good point. Yeah, that's good evidence, I would say.
Oh, so this scene's great.
Oh. Another thing we talked about with the Watchtower. Check out that video, by the way. It's on their YouTube channel, Watchtower Database. And Eli and I did a 20th retrospective with Maddie Washburn. And this scene right here, it is just the classic, like, monster transforming. The Jekyll and Hyde. But Maddie made a good point. It's a good callback to the very first episode of BTAS, the beginning of the DCAU, was On Leather Wings. And we were getting these, like, old-timey horror mad scientist transformations. True. Since then.
True. Yeah, I love this transformation. Visually, it's cool. The laugh is so ominous.
That is another thing. So at some point, whoever was voicing Tim Drake before that, they would have had to shift into Hamill for the laugh.
I think when they cut there, I think that's when he's shifting to Hamill.
The color is done well, too, that, like, how it goes from pale to white.
Yeah. Oh, I never get tired of that.
Drake?
You're the Joker? Yeah, so again, I love the jumpsuit. I think it looks great. I love the slick back hair.
The green, too. So the cell shading is always just stunning in DCAU stuff, and I think that this is one of the best examples of and that is a saying a lot, dude, to say the best example of cell shading in all of the DCAU. I'll say it here, that green on Joker's fucking black head is some of the best cell shading you're ever gonna get in the DCAU.
yeah,
I was so much of their design is about that cell shading.
It's so true, especially Terry's costume. I was mentioning before how,
yeah, especially Terry's costume, all the shadowing is, yeah.
I was mentioning before, but I guess I forgot to finish the thought. Bruce Timm's art style is really interesting when it comes to physique, because You look at, let's say, Bruce from BTS era. Now, Bruce Timm doesn't draw big defining muscles. He just kind of makes you look like, almost like boxed, right? Like you're very like boxed out. It's interesting because if you look at like Bruce from the BTS era, he looks, you can tell it's a really like muscular guy. Then when you look at Terry, you can tell he's muscular, but he's really athletic because of just his build. And then Joker here looks muscular, but again, not overly muscular. So it's just really interesting seeing how Bruce Timm's like sleek art style kind of translates to just the physicality of someone. It's such a, and again, as you said, they're wearing like these costumes that cover all like the defining details of their bodies. So it's just really interesting how like it can be such a simple design, but you can still capture like the different body types and stuff, right? It's cool.
Absolutely.
You were mentioning before how this Joker isn't too muscular. I agree. I think he's like, but he looks physically imposing enough, right?
Yeah, like big enough.
Yeah.
Like, I just, as long as he has a build, that's what I like.
Yeah.
I don't like to think that he can't at least throw some punches. I mean, I understand versions of him, like, where he can't really fight. But I like that this guy can. And obviously, he is Tim Drake, so you have always made a good point that when they're fighting, like, in this, what is probably one of the greatest Batman-Joker fights of all time, it's just so sick that, like, it's actually Tim Drake, who was trained by Batman and is will forever be athletic after that. you don't ever forget, you know, a lot of that training, I'm sure. So
it's really, it makes a lot of sense, though, because you need Joker to be able to be formidable enough to fight Terry in this suit.
In that suit, yeah.
This suit is too powerful for regular Joker to fight.
Oh, yeah. So let's get nitpicky for a sec. How is Terry not just crushing Joker right now with that suit?
For the same reason that he wouldn't crush Bruce if he was fighting Bruce in that suit. Because Bruce's skill is so above Terry that the strength doesn't matter.
And you think Tim Drake still has those skills?
Oh, yeah.
Probably, yeah. And he's not super old. That's the other thing that's halfway believable here. He's like 20 years younger than Bruce. So.
And the thing about it here that I find really interesting is that when these two are about to fight, they both come from sort of a street background. You know, Terry was in a gang for a while, and Tim Drake was a literal street rat. So when they fight, it's almost kind of indicative of like a street fight. Like Joker literally pulls up his sleeves in a minute. He grabs like a pipe that's on the floor. You know, Terry locks the doors and stuff. It's like a street fight. And it's interesting because they both came from the street background. So it's.
Yeah, versus Bruce, who everything is control. His every movement is calculated like a samurai.
Yeah.
And this guy, yeah, he literally just rolled up his sleeves.
And said, well, if it's a whooping you want.
Fisticuffs. Oh, he breaks off the lock, too. Yep. Let's dance, bozo. This is so good. Yeah, and the way he just sprung up, like the way Joker just sprung up like that, this is for sure a... And that's so cool, too, that they don't even bother explaining it out. It's just a thing that if you're smart enough to know, like, hey, this is Tim Drake, that's why he can fight so well.
Yeah. Again, I love that... this is really what defines Terry's Batman. You know, Joker goes into this fight saying, well, logically, I know everything that Batman and Robin knew, so how do you possibly expect to beat me? And, you know, Terry's response is basically, I'm not them, and I'm going to show you. And that's what is happening. He's a dirty fighter. He taunts his opponents. You know, he's just different, and that's how he wins ultimately.
And to get philosophical, like, I think when people don't like Beyond, they say it's too different from original Batman. But if you get like truly like what is Batman, he's fighting against criminality, you know, due to tragedy in his own past. And like this guy's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And using the image of the bat to do so, you know, using fear. He's scaring the shit out of Joker right now. So like he's doing the same stuff. He just has a different way of doing it. And I love, like you said, that also then creates this amazing opportunity for a character to have to prove himself.
Yeah.
In a much, not more interesting way than Robin, I guess, but in an opportunity you don't get with Robin unless you do like a Nightwing type thing.
So you know what's cool about this scene, besides the fact that Terry is completely mocking the Joker? Will Friedle, much like Kevin Conroy, develops a Bruce Wayne, or a Conroy has a Bruce Wayne and a Batman voice, obviously, right? His Bruce Wayne voice is obviously the disguise. When Will Friedle approaches his Batman and his Terry sound different, right? His Batman's a little more gruff, a little more pronounced, whereas his Terry's a little more laid back. In that taunting scene, he almost takes his Terry role, right? So he's almost like breaking character. And I think it's really interesting. Like, it just, it adds so much dimension to how Terry like views the Joker, right? Like, he's not even taunting him as Batman. He's just taunting him, right? And it's just so good. The scene is so good. The smiley face on the
circuit. He's just like, yes, the smiley. Yeah, he's just like, look, I know how to push buttons.
Yeah.
I don't need Batman to do that.
I just like that he breaks his Batman character voice.
That's a really good point. No, I mean, the voice is a big thing with that character.
Yeah.
And it was done so well by these guys that it was never like a problem until Christian Bale, really.
Well, it was so subtle with these guys. Like,
yeah.
He's not trying to strain himself and make him sound way different. You know, he just kind of adds a specific gruffness to his voice, right? It's subtle, but it's noticeable, and I really like that. But what's interesting about his Batman voice is his Batman voice is the disguise, whereas Bruce Wayne voice was the disguise.
Yes.
You know, he made his Bruce Wayne sound a little dumber.
Kinda, yeah.
You know?
Lighter.
Yeah.
Ditzier, yeah.
But Terry just increases the intensity of his
voice. That was a sick shot. The Joker flying at the clown face flying at the screen in this explosion. Because every Batman story has to end with an explosion, Eli.
In the script...
God, that satellite looks good.
In the script, there was a whole B-plot there of like the cops arriving and debating trying to get into Jolly Jack. That's why they're there. That's why they're already there by the time it exploded. But they cut all that. There's a few scenes that were cut that I forgot to mention, but...
Who's this lady, Eli?
Oh, shut up, Nana Harley. Yeah, so this is Harley Quinn. Of course, this raises the question of...
Tara Strong voicing her, right?
Yes.
Like, right? Arlene Sorkin didn't come back for that, did she?
I think this is Tara, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, I'm not either. I mean, if you think about it, that would be one line for Arlene Sorkin to come back.
Right.
Not that she wouldn't, I just...
Well, she had the whole flashback sequence, too.
Oh, then never mind. That's probably her, then. Yeah, there's no way Tara Strong did her in the flashback sequence.
Because she was also doing Batgirl.
Yeah. And they didn't have her doing Harley stuff back then.
Right. So yeah, that's more modern.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not... That's one of the things I'm not certain on. Now, this is the criticism I always have here. Dick Grayson should have been in this hospital room.
Mm.
Like, I'm not one of those people who thinks he should have been in the... Beyond animated series, but I think he should have appeared here. If I had to have one criticism with the movie, that's what this is. This is a reunion, a father like coming back to his children, right? This is a family reunion here. So I think Dick Grayson should have been in that room.
It's such a messed up way to come back to like this. Your reunion's based on the most evil guy that your family knows.
Yeah.
But that is the way to bring back the Bat family, is throw in the Joker. It is the only way to get them all back together, which is interesting, too, if you think about it.
It is.
Like, why else would they all be in the same room again?
True. And what this has done is this... He's now gotten approval from all three of them. All three of them see him as a worthy Batman.
Oh, you're going to make me cry.
And it was just kind of his way of being acknowledged before allowing them to have their family moment.
Oh,
it's just the perfect way to end the Batman Beyond movie before you have him over Neo-Gotham here.
Over Neo-Gotham.
Ugh. Such a good show.
Overlooking a city, the Guardian.
And it really just goes to show that Batman is timeless and You know, you're always going to see the shadow of the bat going over the city.
I heard that was another thing when designing the city and him flying was that they always wanted him to, they wanted him to be on the ground level as little as possible.
Right.
So that was cool in terms of the character now being defined.
Yeah.
Their version of Batman, like he's going to be way up.
Yeah.
Like he's not going to be on the street shooting up a grapnel. Like he's going to already be above, then put on his helm, on his, you know, mask. And oh my God, what a movie.
It's just, for me, it's just kind of that perfect movie. It emotionally, it hits you in all the places it should. It resolves in such a strong closing there. It opens in such a strong opening. I think it's just the whole package.
That's filmmaking at its best. It really is.
Yeah.
Like, not just because, obviously, you know, we're beyond, but... Now, we probably should have prefaced, too, in saying that people always... This is always at the top of their list. Like, this is one of our podcast clips from a few weeks ago. This movie's always at the top of people's list, whether they're Beyond fans or not, for Batman movies.
It's always either this, Phantasm, or Red Hood, all of which are incredible films. Batman Beyond, visually, always... checks my boxes. Purple's my favorite color. I love the purple color palette. I love, obviously, we both love like the cyberpunk aesthetic. Yeah. Visually, it's just, it's all there for me.
It's interesting. I never put that together until just now, because we were talking about how this is the death in the family that we never got from the DCAU.
Right.
Under the Red Hood is the death in the family story. So maybe that's, it's interesting that that's, that both of the top Batman movies are kind of death in the family stories. Like that really just must be a story that gets to everybody. They really want to see Batman feel guilty about shit.
Yeah. Well, and both were contingent on the twist of Robin's returned. The opponent you are fighting, whether it's the Red Hood or this new Joker, this was formerly Robin. And there's just a lot of parallels between both movies and yeah.
And for Beyond to have, again, that theme of redemption that runs throughout the series and everything else, you know, Terry's redemption, then Bruce's redemption, a guy who never thought he'd come back, to then have, like, this is very much a story of redemption, too, of going, you know, am I going to continue letting this kid be a superhero under my watch? Like, look what could happen. I just saw the worst of it. This movie is the worst of... It's Bruce's biggest nightmare as a as the patron of the Bat family. It's his biggest nightmare come to life.
Right.
Which is his one of his pages, one of his soldiers being corrupted.
Right.
You know, so to then be like, am I going to continue now to let Terry do it? I guess that just really that story makes sense that it would resonate so much with people between all these movies.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, baby.
This movie's always just such a pleasure to watch. I have so much fun with it. People think I get, like, bored of it. I just can't. I can't get bored of this movie. There's always so much to see and something new to notice, you know?
That's a good point.
Just, you know, for me anyway.
5 out of 5 automatic batarangs, Eli?
I would say 4.9 out of 5 automatic batarangs. Had Dick Grayson been there, it would have been 5 out of 5.
Yeah. Another what if before we go. So with these commentaries, this is our first commentary, but just to let you guys know, moving forward, as we did, pretty short intro just to kind of like, you know, we're back and also set it up. We'll kind of also go through that initially, but for the most part, you know, just let it roll. And with the episodes, I think we'll probably do 2 episodes at a time.
Yeah,
but we'll get to that when we get to it. But the point is, we also want to do like a quick afterthought. These aren't reviews. Once again, it is a commentary, so we're not going to review anything per se, but just some afterthoughts. I thought one of the things that was cool in the Blu-ray commentary, they said, or it just made me think of a question. So if the story that they choose, Warner Brothers comes to you, you got to do an animated movie for Batman Beyond. At that time, so it's DCAU Beyond, it's 1999, and they come to you, even though the movie obviously released in 2000. You know, they chose the story of what happens to Robin based on the popularity. But what if it was just like, you get to do whatever you want? What story would you have chosen as the team if WB came to you?
That's a good question.
If you don't, you know, want to answer it fully or go into detail, just maybe what are some stories that you think would be cool on a cinematic level? Because that's what's cool about this. It's not just Beyond. It's like, it's not just what would you have wanted to see in Beyond? It's what movie would you want to see of Beyond?
Right.
Now that's getting a Beyond movie is a precious thing. We only have one.
Right. Yeah, so the movie I would want to see as a fan, I mean, even there's ways to do it visually, but as a fan, I would have loved to get a movie that delved into the past of Terry McGinnis a little bit, into his, you know, affiliation with like Charlie Bigelow, just kind of getting the Terry McGinnis that was on the other side of those train tracks. And I think it would have given a lot of impact to his Batman.
Mm.
I would have.
Be good character development too.
Yeah. I would have.
Like for Terry.
Yeah, obviously I can't, you know, I wouldn't want it to be redundant for the episode Big Time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it'd be hard to think of an antagonist that could make Terry recall his past like that without making it another gang member that was in his gang. But,
No, I like that, though. I mean, just the theme of Terry and his past, and we talked about the redemption factor. And
yeah.
That's huge for the character. Yeah.
Theoretically, you could have Blight return and make Blight reminiscent of his past in certain ways. I think that visually, that's what I would have wanted. I would have wanted to see Blight come back. And Blight's my favorite Beyond villain. I think he would have looked really cool on a movie budget.
And but, right, you don't have to have the return of some old character.
Right.
And I guess, yeah, well, that's the last thing we'll talk about is that. It's ballsy to bring back. They always said on Beyond, like, that was part of their Bible, part of their... I don't think there was an official Bible for Beyond like there was for BTAS, but one of their, like, rules that they made was no just willy-nilly, let's Beyond this old character, let's Beyond this old character.
Right.
Not Scarecrow Beyond, not this Beyond, that Beyond. So it's within their own rules, a ballsy, bold thing to go, like, let's bring back... not just the Scarecrow, not just Two-Face, like the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
But for a movie, you don't have to bring back anybody.
Right.
And you could have followed your own rules and just been like, here's a dope ass Blight movie.
Right. Yeah, no.
What did you think would be cool for like a whole feature of Blight? Like, man, there's so much you could do for a whole feature of Blight.
I would delve into the history of Blight, or Powers, I'd say, working up his ways the corporate ladder.
The Rise of Powers?
Yeah.
Dude. And then you could see some in-between tech, too, mm-hmm. of, like, in-between old Gotham and new Gotham.
Yeah. And it would take place in a time where Bruce is still Batman.
And don't stop talking.
And he's in the costume still.
Oh, God. And he's, like, out there, you know, his heart's already starting to, like, hurt in the suit and shit.
Imagine you see him, like, flying across the city and he lands and he, like, grabs his chest for a minute. I'm like, yeah. You see the beating effect.
You're killing me. You're choking me here.
But, no, I think this movie, they earned it. They were so good about not being gimmicky with returning classic villains that... You know what? Yeah, you can have the Joker return. One, that's what everyone wants to know, what happened to him, and you made it work. And two, you were so good at creating your own rogues gallery for this character that you earned having another real rogue return, right? So I feel like this was earned.
No, it was earned.
And it was a slam dunk. So,
oh, man. Well, any last thoughts on... the animated classic that is Batman Beyond Return of the Joker.
I love this movie, and I'm really interested to see how long it stands the test of time.
Mm.
Batman Beyond, as we've talked about...
Speaking of the 20th, yeah, I guess, like, closing thoughts on the 20th, too, yeah.
Yeah. So, Batman Beyond, obviously, is kind of a... it's like a millennial's Batman in a lot of ways, right?
Definitely is, yeah.
You know, he's my Batman, but I'm a millennial. And I just wonder, you know, there's a lot, we've talked about this, there's a lot of more seasoned Batman fans that don't like Batman Beyond as much. It makes you wonder how long, like, this Batman will stay prevalent and this movie will stay prevalent, because it's obviously a much newer thing and it has a different voice to it, but... it's always, now it's out there. And now this is going to become a classic piece of Batman media. So it just, I wonder just how this is going to age and how it's going to be remembered. In another 20 years, we'll have to sit down and talk about it.
For beyond 40, when Ben is way too old. No, man, this movie, you know, again, we talked about it with the Watchtower. I'm pretty sure I came into this movie because, and another, again, it's hard to track, as we talked about earlier, like, when you saw something for the first time and, like, your memory of it or whatever. But I'm pretty sure I did. I saw this later on, and it was, like, maybe I had seen clips of it on TV or something, but I was an adult, and, man, did it hit me as to, like, how good the writing is, how much, because when you're a kid, it's, again, that was your Batman. I was 16 when I was watching it, which was kind of older, but not old enough to really appreciate animation, appreciate writing, appreciate. So by the time I revisited it, you know, 10 years after that, I was, you know, mid-20s or whatever, probably. And it was just so damn good. And ever since, it's always been one of the ones that I revisit. It's definitely one of the reasons that I probably chose the podcast. I think, you know, Batman Beyond as an IP, this is where I'm going to sound like I'm shitty with branding and stuff, but as the intellectual property of something that it's good to not have just been a show. Like, I also get to do stuff like this where it's a thing that has a movie, it has TV, and it has comics.
It's so diversified.
It's very diversified. And to see, like, the team that created them, Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, you know, put this thing and everyone else who worked on the movie, the versatility of writing, their ability to go, like, we've given you the best that you've ever seen for Joker. We're giving you this really cool future Joker. Now you're going to see the best version of the synthesis of the two.
Yeah.
And it really speaks to that OG team. Thank God they, you know, I'm sure when they came to Bruce Timm, they said, assemble your own team, but they could have really had anyone make these movies. And it's scary to think, like, how other people would have handled them. God, it's so good.
You know why the Joker's face is green here on the art, right? And all white?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we'll talk about the art real quick. I love this cover. Wait, so what was the question?
You know why his face is green on the cover and not white?
I don't.
It is a homage to The Man Who Laughs.
Oh, snap. Wow.
Yeah.
That's that old movie that a lot of the Joker stuff's based on, right?
Yep, and the cover of, or one of the covers of it has, I think the character's name is Gwynplaine.
Okay.
And his face is green on the cover, and it looks like just like this. So this is like a direct homage to that.
Always old movie pulls.
Yeah.
Like how Mask of the Phantasm was a Citizen Kane homage with all the flashbacks that Bruce had on his life.
Yeah.
His young life.
It's just such a full circle thing, right? Because that was the character that was really, the Joker's really derivative of, so.
Derivative of?
The Man Who Laughs.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Yeah, this is, you're right. I mean, and then in terms of Joker stories, stuff like that. Like, how good of a Joker movie does that make this? Is that you have, like, the cover based on The Man Who Laughs.
Yeah.
And you have all the sick shit. Like, if you're a Joker fan, like, if you're in the Batman thing as a Joker fan, the people who, like, I always love to think about in collecting, like, with Star Wars, people are, like, Yoda collectors and, you know.
Right.
People, there's Jar Jar collectors, believe it or not. if you're, like, a Joker collector or a Joker person, I'd love to hear, like, comment below or, you know, let us know. Online at Batman Beyond Media, wherever else. I would love to see where you feel, because I'm not like a Joker guy. I love the Joker, but I also, you know, I think I take him for granted, or I always did as a kid. He's kind of understood. I'm sure if he was never in the picture, I'd be like, it would be something obviously hugely missed.
Right.
But he was never my jam as a kid. But damn, like when you, stories like this, I've heard that recent Three Jokers story is another example of, like, let's not forget how badass this character is.
Yeah.
And it's a great, it's a great character piece for this for the Joker.
The Joker's definitely a character that I've come to appreciate more as I've gotten older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I should say for me, that's, yeah.
Because a lot of it stems from my understanding of Batman himself.
Mm.
And just the more I understand Batman and the psychology behind why he does what he does, the more I think I understand the Joker's psychology or lack thereof, just because they're such a unit and they affect each other, right? So, you know, obviously when I watch Batman as a kid, I care more about like the generic action of it, right? But as you begin to understand like the psychological complexities of his character, then you become more fascinated with, like, by extension, not just Joker, but like Two-Face, like Scarface and Ventriloquist, just more of these more obscure villains that are really psychologically damaged. I've come to appreciate more, you know? So
yeah, when you're a kid, you're like, it's just the, like, if you're not a Joker guy, you're like, it's just the annoying clown, whatever. And yeah, he's cool, but, and then you grow up and you're like, oh no, he's pure anarchy.
Yeah.
Like, Batman wants order. He wants pure chaos. Yeah. Everything is funny to him, including human death. Like, whatever a Batman wouldn't do, he would. And yeah. And then, you know, Two-Face, as we always talk about, is like the degree of justice where justice gone too far. And, but the commonality of Bruce, and I love that that's why they're friends. Yeah, it's these villains and this movie really bringing out, once again, like, talk about the idea of these guys are destined to do this forever and them fighting on film and all that stuff. Right. I think that the Joker of all that is brought, meaning, like, if this movie is about that character and how important that character is, like, it is a damn good version of that character.
Agreed.
And story for that character.
Agreed.
Cool, man. This was amazing, and I am so glad to have you back, dude, and I cannot feel my legs right now.
This was fun.
There was no cuts in this, guys.
And my body's going to sleep, too. But it was fun.
Yeah.
We should do this again with, hopefully, like, Rebirth or something soon.
Yeah, so, commentaries are back, or I should say, this is only the first of commentaries. So the podcast is back, I should say, with commentaries. And we're going to continue these because this is just so damn fun.
It was dope.
And, you know, we acknowledge that in the past we've had kind of a non-traditional podcast, more journalistic with all the interviews. It was an interview-based show. So it's cool to see the show evolve. And a lot of people over the years have asked for either the ep by eps like we were doing before, or commentaries, and just kind of giving you guys a little more straightforward content. Mm-hmm. You know, here's an episode of Batman Beyond. We're going to talk about it. Short intro, what we thought about it, in and out, and probably shorter podcast lengths too. We're thinking probably a half hour for most episodes. Maybe the commentary is a little longer, but yeah, man, I'm just so excited to be back, and evolved or not, it's good to have my boy back.
Good to be back.
It's good to be back. And also, it's exciting to be on YouTube. You know, you can see parts of this commentary on YouTube. We're going to have clips of it on there, and it'll be a really enhanced. I think it's really going to step up the pod clips that I put on every week. Every Wednesday, you see the pod clips, but it's going to be cool to have the visual of like the movie playing and us talking about it. I think we've brought a whole new level to the show. I'm excited, man.
It's going to be fun.
All right, guys. So happy Joker's 20th. Happy holidays.
Yes. Safe holidays. Happy holidays.
That's right. You better be safe, especially these holidays. Good God. I mean, for a year like this, it's probably fitting that the most evil character ever has his anniversary.
Yeah.
Ugh, God. Yep. I'm not trying to make light of 2020. I'm being dead serious. Like, fuck the Joker. Fuck this year. But it's about to end. So with that, guys. I mean, I guess, you know, if this is one of our last episodes of the season, and it's probably not going to be our last, but if it is before the year ends, you know, once again, be safe. We go. Hope you guys have a happy new year. And we are back strong in 2021 with more episodes and enthusiasm for Beyond, baby.
Heck yeah.
So this has been Benjamin.
And I've been Eli.
Telling you to go above.
And Batman Beyond.
All right, guys. Again, that is the part two conclusion of our Return of the Joker 20th anniversary commentary. Once again, be sure to subscribe for more Batman Beyond commentaries soon to come, starting with season one of the animated series. Thank you so much for listening. This commentary was just so much damn fun. Again, new episodes of Above and Batman Beyond drop every Wednesday. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on iTunes. Once again, for each new iTunes review, we'll read your review on the show. You're automatically entered in our next Beyond giveaway. Beside Apple Podcasts, you can also find the show on Spotify and SoundCloud. Again, we spend most of our time these days on YouTube, new videos every Sunday and Wednesday. Please consider subscribing there as well for frequent breakdowns of Batman Beyond, podcast clips, as well as our DC animated movie show on the channel. Just like the podcast, we are Above and Batman Beyond on YouTube. As we mentioned earlier, the first podcast episode of DC Animated Movie Show has officially dropped. Please subscribe for new pods every Wednesday. You can find that show on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Our podcast theme music is by Exsanguinator. Our podcast art is by Courtney Delenn Slater over at CDS Graphics. Above and Batman Beyond is part of the CBI Network at Comic Book INTL on all social media. Our show's co-hosts are Eli Benson and Benjamin David. The podcast is produced and edited by me, Benjamin David. And Above and Batman Beyond is a production of Benjamin David Studios. Above and Batman Beyond is not an official production of Warner Brothers or DC Entertainment. The thoughts and opinions shared by the participants of this podcast are theirs and theirs alone, and therefore do not represent the companies or organizations they happen to work for.